This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
June's Journey is a fascinating hidden object mystery gaming app where you'll play as June Parker, tasked with a daunting obligation, solve your sister's murder. Set in the 1920s, the era of glitz and glam, this family mystery is one for the ages. Everyone's a suspect until your investigation determines otherwise. The clues are all around you, hidden within tricky twists and turns. You'll collect detailed information about each character in your photo album where you'll comb over every detail. You can even join a detectives club to chat and play with others or against them in the detectives league. With hundreds of puzzles to solve, you should probably get started today. Discover your inner detective when you download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg, presented by Clear. Enroll today at clearme.com/Peter and try Clear at the busiest airports nationwide.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week from Paris. France is now open to vaccinated American travelers, and I'll talk with François Delahaye, the chief operating officer of the Dorchester Group, about how the tourism sector is coping. Everything from staff shortages to changing guest expectations, and in some cases, unrealistic guest demands. Then, there's an airline you probably haven't heard about, but should. It's called French Bee, and they fly to some places you know, like Paris, at great discounted rates. And they also fly to some locations you don't know, like Reunion Island, way out in the Indian Ocean. I sat down with Marc Rocher, the airline's CEO, for an extended conversation. And then I'll talk about one of my favorite subjects, and perhaps yours as well, food, with Alexandre Lebrano, American expat and author of Hungry for France and his most recent book, My Place at the Table. He's my go-to guy for all things food, and with good reason. First up, a report from France and travel with François Delahaye.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to your hotel.
Thank you, Peter.
It's as I walk around Paris and I take a look, I see a city that's starting to come back, that's open again. You know, it's such a relief and a wonderful, pleasant surprise that we can come back here now. That you know, if you're fully vaccinated, you land and you're here. You can go to any restaurant you want. Just show your proof of vaccination. You are free to go, and it's been a long time. I'm one of those people who has had a love affair with Paris since I came here when I was 12 years old with my parents, and I make it a rule to come back at least once a year. And last year I got broken; I couldn't come, and so this year I couldn't wait to come back. And of course, here we are. But are you seeing a return now? Are people starting to come back?
Absolutely, Peter. Not only from America, but also from South America and, of course, Europe. So we are seeing that wave of clients who are in a wish of really having the best time possible. And they take big suites. They're coming with their private plane, and they are big spender, and it's a joy to really see them with that wish of really enjoying the contact with people, the shops, the new restaurants in Paris, the new exhibition we are having in Paris. So it's really something great to see that wave of clients coming back.
Of course, the last 18 months have not been easy for anybody. It's been a struggle, not just for this hotel, but hotels and restaurants in general. Staffing remains an issue worldwide. I'm sure it's still an issue here.
Absolutely, yes. The fact of I've been taking care of our employee at 100% for the entire Dorchester collection creates for 18 months a pace of not working for the employee. And they found out that there is a life other than working on weekends, working during the evening, and working in split shift. So they realize that they all want to have their weekend. So it's very challenging right now to keep our employee who have not been working for 18 months and wants to, and they have having that wave of clients. So some of them wants a big change of life, and they wants to go in the middle of the province of France, take care of the sheep or take care of the goats. I don't know, but some of them wants to have a real change of their life, and that's a challenge for us.
Well, the pandemic, you know, beware the law of unintended consequences. The pandemic allowed everybody, even you and me, to do a rethink, to do a reset, to question our lot in life, if you will, our quality of life, our cost of living, where we live, what we do, is this a job or a passion? And in the hospitality industry, it took a big hit. And I mean, not just hotels, but restaurants, and then all the underlying vendors, everybody's in the same boat right now.
Absolutely, it's difficult.
I know. So what's the solution?
The solution, I think it's not only giving the right salary, but it's also to give some respect, to give some training to the people, and to give them a hope of growing within the company and moving up in the hierarchy of the company and to take care of them. So it's going to be much more times for us to take care of them and to just to care about our employee. So I really think that's going to be the solution, to take care of our employee even more than what we were doing before.
And what that means across the board, whether it's Paris or Peoria, Illinois, better wages, better conditions, better respect as to the profession of the job as opposed to just the occupation.
And that's fine for people like us. But sometimes we challenge with guests who are not behaving very well. And some employees do not want to be badly treated anymore by those guests. And that's a challenge. And
because there was always the notion, and you were trained on this notion, that the guest is always right.
Absolutely. So true. But the young generation do not accept that bad treatment of people who do have money and behave badly and treat badly the employee. And that's a challenge. And we need to be in the middle in order to balance that, in order to satisfy the clients, but to just tell them that there is a red line they must not cross.
No matter how much money they have.
Absolutely.
So let's go back to the last 19 months. What are some of the lessons that you learned and applied as a direct result of what you went through?
But I think, as you just rightly say before, Peter, we had a reboot. We had a reboot, a rethink of all our life and our business too. And we were questioning when we decided not to resign the contract with Alain Ducasse, to change and to think about what's the wish of the clients.
And let me remind everybody that for many, many years, you had perhaps his signature restaurant here at this hotel.
21 years.
And it was an amazing restaurant. It was designed amazingly. The food was presented amazingly. The choices were unbelievable. The ambiance, the whole experience, it was an experience. And when you walked into the hotel, that restaurant was literally right through the center door of the reception.
And absolutely, and it was absolutely a stunning experience for 21 years. And I think 21 years is a great number of years. And I was very proud to be able to work with Mr. Ducasse for those 21 years. And I'm very proud of that. And we succeeded. But our clients needs change. And we need to change. And we had to rethink. And the way we thought, it's all the plates of the gastronomic restaurants, New York, Singapore, London, everywhere, they all look alike, with some lines, some dots, some flowers. They're all a little shishi. And when you, as Peter, when you land in Narita, what is the best wish you're having? You want to go to the best sushi bar. You want to have the best Japanese experience. When you land in Paris and you arrived in Charles de Gaulle and you want to have a real French food experience, the only access to typical Escoffier dishes are in the bistro. So we want to have the Plaza Athénée to be able to offer a real French experience in the 5 restaurants, all different, of course, to have a real French with that grandeur of the elegance of the Plaza Athénée with French typical dishes from Escoffier, from Vatel. That's the aim.
And with just a little butter.
Well, no, of course, we need... No, that's very true. We need to be careful.
And by the way, the best butter is either from Normandy or from Brittany.
Absolutely. But we need to be careful because our way of thinking and eating is changed. And we need to be careful about our waste. And we have, with Jean Humbert, a great way to rethink that. But I'm talking about on the flambage, to cut and carve in front of the guests. It's the experience more than on the food, really. So it's really what we need to bring. It's the French cuisine, the art de vivre à la française, what we want to bring in that beautiful setting, which is the Plaza Athénée.
And, of course, in your corner restaurant, I remember from day one, when I used to eat meat, going in there for the steak tartare.
Absolutely, still there, actually. We kept it. This is a signature.
Still done at the table.
Absolutely.
Too bad I don't eat meat anymore, but I loved it. So you're coming back, you're getting back your employees, you're rethinking their role in life and the way the service is being done in terms of the guests. Are the guests coming back with different expectations now?
Guests love the change. Guests love to see that we hear them. They don't want to be dictated to eat this or this. So they love to have those change. And everyone which has been trying our bistro right now, the Relais Plaza, they all come back. We are refusing business there. It's packed, packed, packed. It's a great success. And this show that guests, they love to be heard. And when we did listen to them and we implement with Jean Humbert what they wanted, it's working.
My thanks to Francois. Now, you want to go to Paris? You can, starting at about $398 round trip on an airline you've probably never heard about, French Bee. And they have a fascinating route network for travelers who want to go beyond Paris. I sat down with their CEO, Marc Rocher, for the full story. So let's start with the history of the airline, because your history goes back to, what, 1999?
Yeah, long time ago.
Yeah, but you got into the airline business doing what?
I started in the airline industry when I was very young because all my family was working in the airline business. My father was working for Air France, which is a fabulous French airline, and all my brothers and so. So all of us are in the airline industry, and I started in the airline industry in a French company named Air Inter.
But it
was a long time ago. I went to UTA, which was flying to San Francisco.
And Tahiti.
I went to Air France. Then I decided to go on my own and working for a French private family, which was Groupe Dubreuil. This family had a company named Air Carib, which was a small one. We were in the years 2001, 2002. The company that was a purely regional carrier in the French West Indies, Guadeloupe and Martinique, was not in good shape. And Jean-Paul Dubreuil told me, Marc, can you tell me something about what we can do. And I decided to review the company, which was really not in good shape. And we start Longol. And that was a success. Longol from Guadeloupe, Martinique, Saint Martin
to Paris.
To Paris. And we grow the company. We bought some Airbus airplane. And we have been quite successful because the customers, this is the most important thing, the customers like Air Caribbean. But, you know, the airline industry is very conservative. And when you have an airline on the market doing well for 10 years, 15 years, your costs are going up. Every time I have seen that. So
you reach a certain point.
Yeah, it's always the same story. Costs are going up, but customers, they want to pay less for a better service. So you are cost going up, and the demand from the customer is very important. They want to pay less.
So if that's the cycle, why are you in the airline business?
Because it's a passionate world. there are three types of same activity, I think, for human passionate people. One is the airline industry. The other one is what you are doing, medias, because something can happen anytime, even just in the night of night Christmas or something like that. Something can happen at 2 a.m. in the morning of Christmas Day. And last activity is medicine and health related business, because people can have an issue with their body, health issue, again, in the Christmas night. So
if you're in the airline business, you're a risk taker.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to be a risk taker. You have to be passionate. You have to be ready to take a call at 2 a.m. in the morning, because it's a situation which is complex.
But I go back to the Richard Branson quote that if you want to be a millionaire, you start with $1 billion and open an
airline. I don't agree. I have a lot of respect and inspiration from Richard Branson, but I don't agree. And what we have done with Air Caribbean, what we have done with UTA a long time ago, we make serious money. And just to give you a flavor, if I take Air Caribbean and French Bee together in 2019, the last good year before the crisis, we were making a net return profit about 5 to 6%, which are very good figures. But let's come back to the story. When we had that success with Air Caribbean, we have seen our costs going up. We have seen the passenger demanding for lower price, better quality. And we thought about that, and we said the only thing is to start a new airline from a white sheet of paper, totally white sheet of paper, because this industry is very conservative. If you want to move the things, if you want to change the world, if you want to change the communication to the customer, they are very, very conservative people. So here in French Bee, we start in 2016, beginning of 2017, totally from scratch.
And originally it was going to be French Blue.
Yeah, that was the name we chose at the beginning. We've been not very well advised by our lawyers and so, because they said, oh, French Blue is a beautiful name. Then came JetBlue. So at this time, we were flying to República Dominicana. We were flying to Punta Cana, place like this. And JetBlue.
You were flying to the beach resorts.
Yeah, beach resorts. And the people, lawyers from JetBlue told us, you cannot use the name with Blue, which was a bit bizarre, I have to say, because this means they don't own the name Blue for all the world. But we decided not to fight because, the U.S. lawyers, French lawyers, Dominican lawyers, it will have cost a huge time, huge energy, and a lot of money. So we put people on the table and we said, let's think about a new name. And then they came back with French Bee. We checked French Bee. French Bee was okay. So now it's the name of the company. But the first time JetBlue will fly into Paris, I will remember that story, and I will see what we can do.
So you didn't forget.
No, never forget.
All right, so you started a brand new airline.
Yeah.
And what was the premise of that airline? What was this airline going to be different about?
The promise of this airline was you are going as a customer to travel in one of the best airplanes, Airbus 350, at the lowest cost we can afford and you can afford, and that will be a very good value for money. We are not going to give you a luxury service. We are not going to put into the market a new business class, full flat bed and something like that.
I mean, I remember Freddie Laker, as you remember Freddie Laker.
Yeah.
What got Freddie Laker in trouble was when he put a first class section in.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I remember MGM Grand, which is an all first class airline.
Yeah.
And what got them in trouble? They put a coach section in.
Absolutely. So we think, and we are looking at that now in the market, that the growing market of the air travel is really economy, because it's built around two kinds of customer. One is VFR, visit friends and relative, and tourist people. VFR and tourist people are not exactly the same. It's different behaviors, different demand on pricing, different seasonality. VFR, they want to travel a one time of vacation. They want to travel at Christmas. They want
very
to travel
seasonal.
In summer.
Very seasonal.
Tourist people can be a good way of putting all people on board, because an aircraft like this need to fly at least 5,000 hours a year, which means flying every day. 15, 16 hours. So this is a combination of VFR market and tourist market, which are not exactly the same.
Now, we all know this. You make no money when the plane's on the ground. That's not exactly a surprise to you. But you got to utilize it for routes that make sense. So for my audience, they have no idea about Reunion Island. They have no idea about Paris to Martinique. But if they did find out about it, it might be an opportunity for them to change their travel plans, because the cost is good.
Yes, but it's why we came into thinking about the U.S. market. So why did you think about the U.S. market? It's because of Tahiti. French territories, Guadeloupe, Martinique, Réunion, which are not very well known by the U.S. customer. Tahiti is well known by the U.S. customer because it's like a dream. Flying to Tahiti is a dream for every people. And every people want one time in his life going to Tahiti. So we decide to fly to Tahiti with the Airbus A350, which was a good airplane for this kind of route. Big demand, very focused on long haul. The airplane is very good on long haul flights, but we cannot fly one stop from Paris to Tahiti.
It doesn't have the range.
No range, it's too far. And so we had to choose where we can stop. At this time, most of the airline flying Tahiti, I mean Air Tahiti Nui and Air France, they were doing a stop in Los Angeles. And we said, again, because we were a new airline from a white sheet of paper, don't do the same thing than the other ones. If Air France is stopping in Los Angeles, we have to think about a new place to stop. And we choose San Francisco. San Francisco was really a success. And we flew to San Francisco and San Francisco to Tahiti. Then came the crisis. But the crisis was just between commas, a stop for 1 year and a half. It's time to go back. It's time to fly back. I think the lift of a travel ban is a very good opportunity for us and for American travelers. So next week, we are going to fly back to San Francisco to Tahiti.
Exactly. So, for example, for an American passenger who wants to go to Tahiti, they just got to get to San Francisco.
Yeah.
And if they want to go to Paris, they just got to get to San Francisco.
Yeah. Now.
Or New York. Or Newark.
It's the situation now. But we have decided to go because we have been successful. We think we have a good airplane. We have a good service. We have the right pricing for people, VFR and tourist people. And it's why we decided, okay, we have done a lot of works to be in San Francisco, commercial team, booking centers, everything. And we said we have to go to another route. And we choose New York, Newark Airport. And our intention was to start in 2020. Then came again this virus and all the consequences. So we moved the decision to start Newark to Paris early to 2021. 2021, as you know, we were beginning to see the end of a tunnel, people thinking that the crisis will be behind us. We were not seeing an intention from the U.S. administration to lift the travel ban. But we said, that will happen one day.
Has to
so,
happen.
Yes, to happen. So we start in July this year, by July the 14th, the Bastille Day, and we launched New York. New York was quite very surprising for us because we could not sell in France because it was impossible with a travel ban to travel from Paris to New York. But US citizens were allowed to travel from New York to Paris. And surprisingly, because we have done a lot of focus, we were very cheap on this market and we want to grow the business, we had almost between 56 and 60% load factor with only one half of the market, huh? Not selling in France, just selling in the US.
So the problem was, how do you fill the planes on both ends?
Yeah, this was a problem, but we made a bet. We said the administration, the U.S. administration, will open one day, not too far, if possible. And then it came. So now, November the 8th, it will be lifted. The travel ban is going to open the route. We had already this 60% load factor from the U.S. part of the market. So we have already seen that in our booking. When we will open to the French market, French people will travel. And we think we are going to be successful.
Once the administration announced that November 8th date, how did you see your booking curve go?
The booking was like booming.
It rocketed.
Yeah. Because I think many people have been starved to fly. And they wanted a lot of things. They wanted to travel again. They wanted to, let's come back to this VFR. They wanted to see their families, their sons.
And they didn't want to wait till next summer. They want to go now.
No. Absolutely. They want to go now. And we had a booming demand on our booking centers. The booming is very important now for Christmas. Christmas is really going to be high traffic, I think. And also the fact that for many people, I think to travel again is just a way of saying we are free again. It's not only about travel. It's we have been obliged to stay home, very huge restriction on everything. So when the travel ban is lifted, it's not only about air travel. It's we are free again to do what we want to do. So the demand is booming. And it's booming on New York. It's booming on San Francisco. San Francisco to Papeete, we are now selling 80 passengers a day. 80 passengers a day, which is a huge demand. They want to go to Tahiti.
So if you want to visit any of the French overseas territories, you're the airline.
If you are VFR, tourist, a bit of business, but not that much. So if you're a businessman, I can understand you need to travel in a full flatbed or something like that. But this is not what we're doing. The good thing for us, for our staff, for our customers, is that the booming traffic is going to be the economy traffic, premium economy. The business traffic is very low now, and many airlines are complaining about that. Big US airlines, Air France, is very low in business traffic. And that, I think, will not recover before years, huh? Two years, 3 years minimum.
So if you're looking for the recovery in travel, it's being led by the leisure carriers.
Leisure traffic, absolutely. And a bit of cargo. The belly of this airplane, which is a huge airplane, like 777, 787, this aircraft flying from Paris to New York, for example, can take about 15 tons of cargo in the bellies. And this market is also booming. The leisure traffic is booming, but also the cargo market. And with an airplane.
But you didn't start this airline to be in the cargo market.
No. But the bellies is very important. Just one figure.
Yeah.
If you look at the total air cargo traffic in the world by air, not by sea, of course, it's different. But if you look at the total air traffic cargo by air, 80% of the traffic is done by passenger airplane in the bellies. And only 25% of the total air traffic of cargo is done by specialized cargo airplanes. So the bellies are very important.
So you're capable of doing that?
Yeah. And we want to do that and because we want to make money at the end of the day. Huh? We are a private company. We are owned by a French family. We have incentivized our people, our staff, to understand that if a company is making money, we will return that to them. Just to give you a flavor, in 2019, we said at the end of the year we were profitable. We made serious profit. we said to the staff, very simple. We will divide that profit, total profit, in four shares, 25% each. 25% of the profit will be for the staff, and we turn that money to the staff. 20% will be for the shareholders because they have taken risk, they have financed the airplane and so and so. And the two other parts, 50%, will be used into the airline for growing the business, buying new airplanes, investing in new digital system. You know, the commercialization, marketing right. is going to be more and more digital. So we will use 50% of our net profit to invest into the company, one-fourth for you, the staff, one-fourth for the shareholder.
But and that is working. Out, you needed that money to get to weather the storm.
Yeah, yeah. The storm, I hope, is behind us. I hope.
But that was, at least you had the money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we were very, financially speaking, we were very strong just before the crisis. 2019 was a very good year. The first 2 months of 2020, because the crisis in Europe happened in March 2020, the 17th, I remember that.
Me too.
President Macron speaking on the TV, the 17th. But we made in January and February 2020 very, very good months. So the traffic is there. Now, I think the traffic is going to be back, mainly in the leisure market and in the cargo market. One thing is going to be taken into account. We need to protect our environment. And it's very important for us to think about that. We are not thinking about silly things like hydrogen airplanes or so and so. We don't think about that. We think about using the best aircraft for burning fuel.
So alternate fuels.
Yeah. Not only alternate, also burning fuel at all. Because even when you burn alternate fuels, let's say bio fuel and so, at the end of the day, you produce carbon oxide, even if we have biofuel. But the best thing is to think about how can we reduce the burning. And this airplane is quite good. If you fly to New York, each passenger will burn, let's say, less than 0.8 gallon per 100 miles, which is very low. No car is doing that. We are better than any car. Mm. We try.
So now let's talk about pricing. Because once you've figured out your model and you know who your audience is, you still have to price it right. Mm? So the airline tickets that people can buy today, it's remarkable. We're seeing in the United States airline fares rise at the rate of 3 to 5% a day at a time of the year where it normally isn't, right? Because all the foreigners are now coming to the United States, more Americans are flying. If you look at the total capacity and the numbers of people flying right now in the U.S. domestically, it's only 6% less than 2019,
yeah, yeah,
which is amazing.
And good recovery, yeah.
Yes, but it's more expensive to fly from New York to Chicago than New York to Paris.
Yeah, I think we are seeing the same thing in Europe. The domestic demand, the demand for traveling into each country is quite strong. The demand for long haul is a bit weaker, still weaker. Even if traveling to the US, there is a huge demand. We have decided to keep our pricing very low because we want to incentivize people to come back. Take again an airplane. You can fly one way in economy, in coach. You can fly to New York for less than $200, which is not that huge money. And because we have the best probably airplane, we have one of the best organization, we are a young airline, we have not that staff of 20 or 30 years of existence, we have a lot of conservative things. We think we are very efficient. This airplane can carry 411 passengers, which is a big airplane. And this is the kind of thing when you can build low fuel burn, you can build a really good pricing. So today we are selling $200 one way in New York, Paris. We will go to 300 probably, but not before next summer. We want people first to come back, travel with French B, and then you will be recognized as a good customer to the company.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks.
Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
My thanks to Mark. And now, it's time to eat with one of the best writers on the subject, Alexandra Lobrano, the author of Hungry for France and My Place at the Table. So in the wake of COVID, has Paris retained its reputation as the best food city in the world? Alexandra thinks he knows the answer. Alec Lobrano, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, Peter.
Now, the other reason why I call you is because you know everywhere to go, everywhere to eat, and, I mean, you are all things Paris to me.
Well, thank you very much for that. It's a pleasure to be all things Paris. You've come at a great time. The city is buzzing. After last year, we had two lockdowns. The restaurants were all closed here twice, and we're open up again, and the scene is fantastic in Paris right now. I mean, we're really hungry for Paris. The restaurants are full. We're having a good time. We're going out.
I will tell you, I was at a restaurant the other night, full. A restaurant last night, full. Two legendary restaurants for different reasons. One restaurant I've been going to for like 8 years. Nobody knows about it. It's this tucked away little corner off the Champs-Élysées on a little street called General Lanrazac, called Le Hide.
It's a fantastic restaurant.
It only has maybe 14 tables in the restaurant. Asian chef, right? Kobayashi.
Right.
And I have to make an admission to my audience, and this may be politically incorrect, but I'm going to say it. First, let me give you the background. I haven't had meat for 13 years. I'm now a pescatarian for the last 13 years, and proudly so. But once a year, when I'm in Paris, I go to this restaurant, and I break it. I cheat. And because this guy does the most amazing pan-seared foie gras. Oh, I said it. I did it, but I proudly did it, and it's unbelievable.
I think cheating every once in a while is a good idea, Peter.
But I've done it only once a year. I didn't do it last year because of the pandemic.
Right.
And I didn't order twice this year to make up for it.
So it tasted twice as good.
It did. So that was the first restaurant. The second restaurant was just last night, which is in the Montparnasse area. Oh, my God, what history there. Rotonde.
La Rotonde, which is one of the favorite restaurants of, I was actually at La Rotonde with the night that the second lockdown ended. It was full. It was a beautiful spring night. The terrace was absolutely stuffed. And lo and behold, who happened to come to dinner that night? The French President Emmanuel Macron, and the entire terrace burst into applause because we're grateful to him for having handled this public health crisis with such intelligence and firmness and clarity. France has done a brilliant job.
And you're open.
And we are open. And, when you go to a restaurant in Paris now, the first thing that happens when you walk through the doors—
And they ask you for your vaccination card.
You,
and they do.
And that's on a public app called Tous Anti-Covid. The French have done a brilliant job with this challenge.
So in your new book, My Place at the Table, I mean, it really takes off from where the other books left off in terms of how food has evolved in this gastronomic capital of the world.
Well, I would say, actually, one of the questions people ask me most often is Paris still the world's best food city? We can't compare Paris to Mumbai or Tokyo, but within the Western world, I'd say that Paris is still the world's best food city, and we've never eaten better in Paris than we do today.
And I don't want to sound elitist, but I don't think I first came to Paris with my mom and my dad when I was 12 years old. And from that moment till today, I don't think I've ever had a bad meal here.
It can happen. we all know that if you are hungry and it starts raining and you go into the nearest restaurant to the Eiffel Tower or the Louvre or anything like that, you're going to get fleeced. Walk a couple of blocks over. I mean, that's a general rule for travel in any big city. Get away from the tourist attractions. But in a general way, I think that Paris has a new generation of brilliant young chefs have emerged here.
Well, there's a new chef right here at the Plaza Athénée.
There's a brilliant young chef named Jean Imbert. It was a very controversial and thing that happened here. Alain Ducasse formerly was the head chef at the Plaza Athénée. Ducasse is a brilliant chef and one of the great gastronomic, you know, czars of France. But the hotel decided that it was time to change. And Jean Imbert, who's a great friend of Pharrell Williams, they tapped him on the shoulder. They brought him in, and he started off with the legendary Relais Plaza, one of the most beautiful restaurants in the whole world downstairs. It looks like the inside of a 1920s ocean liner.
Yeah.
And when I went to dinner there a couple weeks ago.
And by the way, I used to go there for lunch, right, the corner restaurant
right.
there. When I ate meat, I have to put this in perspective, they did the most amazing steak tartare table side. It was a work of art.
Well, that they still do that, actually. It's also the best sole meuniere in the world. But when I went there the other day, Peter, I was curious to see what this young Turk was going to get up to. And it was fascinating because he was not going to do, you know, test tubes and weird stuff like Ferran Adrià, the Spanish chef. It was really humble, delicious comfort food. What he understands, because he's very smart, is that what we want to eat is always a reflection of the times that we live in. And we've just been through something, and we're still not out of the woods yet, and we're a little traumatized, so we want comfort food.
I think you're right. You know, people just need their blankie. They need, on every level, they need their blankie in terms of their travel experience, they need their blankie in terms of their accommodations, and they need their blankie in terms of their food experience.
Well, I think, you know, I can tell you, Peter, I spent a year and a half cooking. You know, I'm a restaurant guy. I normally go out 5 nights a week in Paris.
But not during the lockdown.
Not during the lockdown. Suddenly, boom. So I cycled through the 5 things that I know how to cook well pretty quickly. I've actually turned into a pretty good cook. All of which is to say, though, when I started going out again, what I've discovered, and I'm not the only one, my relationship with food and my tastes have changed. I don't want fiddly, fussy, chefy, strange food. I want things that taste like what they are. When you mentioned before, foie gras, for
example.
Know,
so many chefs, and this is pre-pandemic, so many chefs would overthink the recipe.
That's exactly true.
Right? They would just add more stuff to it, like, stop. You don't have to do it.
Or you know, I don't necessarily want, you know, a Broadway production in the plate. I mean, let the fish be fish. Let that beautiful wild piece of wild salmon be a beautiful piece of wild salmon. I think humility, I think there's a new humility in terms of French cooking, which goes back to why French food is so brilliant. Many people think French food is too fussy, too expensive, and too rich, as cream, butter, all that stuff, which isn't true. It's really it's like Japanese food. It's based on the produce, the veneration for great seasonal produce. And I think the pendulum on what's happened in the world in terms of French food, we've gone back to valuing that deep simplicity. And away from the fussiness, which now seems like, you know, a very long time ago, because when you know, when there are huge jolts in history, like we've just lived through, we're coming out on the other side of something, and our appetite is for things that are healthy, seasonal, simple, and wholesome.
And that doesn't mean you can't be adventurous. It doesn't mean you can't experiment. But at the end of the day, when we're just emerging from this, people just want stuff that they know what they're getting.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I think that, and also one of the other reasons that France, what I was saying before, why Paris is still the Western world's best food city is the produce here. I mean, go for a walk in a market, you know, at this time of the year, it's mushroom season in Paris. Since you don't eat meat, I wish I could take you out for a mushroom feast. The mushrooms are coming in from every part of the country. They're coming from the Pyrenees and the Alps and everywhere else. It's wild mushroom season. They are magnificent, and people go out to eat mushrooms. Where I was last night, this wonderful restaurant on the Left Bank called L'Auberge Bressan, it's a traditional old bistro. They had sep mushrooms, they had girole, which I can't remember, I think morels, 5 or 6 different types of mushrooms, cooked very simply because you want the pleasure of eating this special rare thing.
You know, I read you all the time in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. What do Americans expect in Paris, though? What do they, you know, what are their preconceived notions that have to be disabused?
I think that, again, too rich, too fiddly, too fussy, and too expensive. That's what my father always said. Too expensive, too fussy, and too fiddly, and then the big bill. It's not fussy. I mean, French food is truly not fussy. It's a food of enormous thrift and frugality. Many of the greatest French dishes, like beef bourguignon, beef burgundy, we'd say in English, or blanquette de veau, which is stewed veal with mushrooms, the meats were stewed because they were tough. I mean, you broke down the cartilage through long periods of cooking. It's very thrifty, healthy food. It's the French, you know, the French are not, there's not an epidemic of obesity in France. You don't see overweight people in France because the food is extremely
healthy. Why I hated the French when I was growing up, because I couldn't understand how they could eat so well and eat so much and weigh 6 pounds.
Right.
I couldn't do it. You know, I resented it, quite frankly. But there's a certain amount of pride in the produce and a certain amount of pride in the seafood. At Le Raton last night, I ordered some oysters. Not just any oysters, the Gillardot, right? The number threes.
Those are the Rolls Royce. That's
oysters. But here's the thing. When you finish the oyster, you turn over the shell, and they have branded the shell with their initial to let you know it's the authentic Gillardot.
There is oyster counterfeiting, believe it or not. That's why they engrave the shells. There really is. Well, you know, if you could palm off, you know, your Peter Greenberg oysters on some unsuspecting person.
By the way, please understand, everybody listening, if you ever order a Peter Greenberg oyster, do not eat it. Go directly to the hospital. Don't even stop. What first brought you over here?
Do I have to tell you that it was the food?
Was it really?
No. Well, no. I actually moved over here to work for Fairchild Publications. It was a fashion publishing company.
Those are the guys who Women's Wear Daily
all that stuff. I have no aptitude for that or particular interest. That was my flying carpet to get. I was living in London. That was my flying carpet that got me from London to Paris. And when I was hired for that job, Mr. Fairchild, when he offered me the job, I panicked and I said, "Mr. Fairchild, I really don't know anything about fashion." And he said, "I could tell that when you walked in here."
But he still offered you the job.
But if it doesn't work out, that's easy. I'll fire you. But I came here almost, it was exactly, you know, 35 years ago, because I fell in love with Paris the first time I came as a teenager with my family. Like, you know, I came with my mother and my father, my brothers, my sister, and we'd been all over Europe. We'd spent 6 weeks here. But when we got to Paris, I was just gobsmacked. I mean, the city, the elegance of the daily life here, the food, the smells, the markets, the bakery, the cheese shops. I just could not, you know, I knew I would have to come back here. I mean, I knew this was where I belonged.
I first came to Paris when I was 25, working for Newsweek. Not officially assigned here, but I would come through here on stories. And I didn't totally appreciate it then. You know, everybody talks about, you know, their early years in Paris. Forget my early years in Paris. It's my later years in Paris that I truly appreciate. Because I've had the time to put it in perspective and give it some context. I mean, because now I can look at a building and I can stare at that building all day because I can appreciate the architecture.
Well, it's the day for me. People often say, "Why have you stayed 35 years?" The food is spectacular, and you have to eat three times a day. But it is four, as the case may be. But the daily nourishment, the most important nourishment, is the elegance and the beauty of this city, which is relentless. And as you just said, I mean, I don't go, you know, I walk to the post office in the 9th arrondissement where I live. I've done that walk 50 times. Every time, 500 times, every time I go, I notice something I hadn't seen before. Some small detail carved into a facade or a brass balustrade or something. The city is just magnificent, and it feeds you. I mean, it feeds you creatively. It feeds you spiritually. It's, I've become a Parisian.
You know, back in New York during the pandemic, I watched as 1,500 restaurants closed, most of which will never reopen. Did that happen here in Paris?
Paris, the French government actually, because food is such an important part of French culture, the French government offered a lot of help and protection for the restaurants. I mean, the restaurants were closed, but they were given loans to continue to pay their rent, to keep the bills. They were excused from paying social charges, which are, you know, contributions to Social Security and health insurance and stuff. The government has done everything it possibly can to help the restaurant business, and that's why the restaurant business here has sprung back so quickly. I was in New York this past summer. It was still, there were a lot of favorite places that had closed.
Oh, listen, in my neighborhood, my four favorite restaurants are gone. You know, and they're not coming back.
Right, right.
You know, and you would think, at least in the New York example, that, okay, is there a silver lining here? Well, maybe, because if you're an up-and-coming chef, there's so much real estate available to you now with already kitchens already there, blah, blah, blah. But no, that's not happening because the landlords aren't lowering the rents. So they're vacant.
Well, here, I mean, that's one other thing, big difference between New York and Paris is that Paris is not a financial center to the same degree as New York or London or Singapore or Hong Kong. The rent pressure has prevented the city from gentrifying in to the same degree that New York has. But I think here, since the second lockdown ended, you know, the restaurant scene is sizzling. As I mentioned, there are a lot of fantastic young new chefs. My favorite new restaurant right now is called Granite. Because this is a young chef who understands, keep it simple. I mean, really keep it simple. His name is Tom Meyer. He grew up in the Jura, which is in eastern France. There's a brilliant restaurant, new restaurant czar in Paris named Stéphane Manigold. He's opening new restaurants. He has an ability to pick talent. He picked Tom Meyer, who's maybe not even 30, to run this restaurant called Granite, which is in the same space that was formerly occupied by Spring, the restaurant of Daniel Rose, the Chicago-born American chef who lived in Paris for a long time and now in New York City at Le Coucou. So Granite is absolutely brilliant. I would send you to the Relais Plaza downstairs here to taste the wares of Jean Imbert. If I could get you, bundle you onto a plane and get you down to the south of France, I would send you to Mauro Colagreco. He's just opened a new restaurant called Seto.
Where?
And that's in Roquebrune Cap Martin, which is right next to Monaco. And it's perched on a cliff there. And it's all seafood, and it's one of the best restaurants I've ever been to in my life.
Well, as a pescatarian, I take you up on that
invitation. I think you'd love it, Peter.
Oh, my God. My thanks to Alexander, to Mark Roche, and to Francois Delahaye. And my thanks to you for listening to this Eye on Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, pull up a chair and log on to petergreenberg.com.
Special thanks to our sponsors at Clear. Enroll in Clear at clearme.com/Peter and zip through busy airports nationwide.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Eye on Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.